Rousseau is often considered the forerunner of the cultural movement known as Romanticism. There are several reasons for this: his frequent glorification of emotion and impulse, and his attacks on social conventions. One of the main reasons, however, is his profound love of nature. Not of nature in every form. For instance, he could not stand the sea, but he loved to commune with hills, forests, and lakes. He wrote of them as no one before him had. All this while, Rousseau was learning from his travels and experiences more than from books. In his book Confessions, he tells of a lesson in politics and economics learned while walking in the French countryside. He stopped at a peasant's cottage, where he implored the owner for food and drink. At first, the peasant offered Rousseau only coarse barley bread and skimmed milk. After watching the famished youth bolt down the food, however, he suddenly said that he was persuaded that Rousseau was honest and not a paid spy. Opening a trap door by the kitchen, the peasant went into the cellar and brought back some wheat bread, a ham, and wine, which he gave to Rousseau, even adding a nice omelet. Rousseau explained the peasant's fear.
At the last, he tremblingly pronounced the terrible words, "Excise man." He hid his wine on account of the excise, and his bread on account of the duty, and he would be a lost man if they suspected for a moment that he was not dying of hunger. All that he said to me on this subject, which was entirely strange to me, made an impression on me which will never grow dim. It was the germ of that inextinguishable hatred which afterwards grew in my heart against the oppression to which the unhappy people are subject and against their oppressors. That man, although in easy circumstances, dared not eat the bread he had earned by the sweat of his brow, and could only evade ruin by displaying the same misery which prevailed all around him. I came out of his cottage, equally touched and indignant, deploring the fate of those lovely lands on which nature has only lavished her gifts to make them the prey of barbarous tax farmers.
Through personal experience, Rousseau acquired a respect and appreciation for the common people, rare among intellectuals of his day. This is one of the features that most struck and moved his readers. The famous German philosopher Immanuel Kant credited Rousseau with opening his eyes and awakening him to a sense of common humanity. Kant kept a picture of Rousseau on the wall of his study and regarded the Genevan writer as the Newton of the moral world.
There was a time when I despised the common man who knows nothing. Rousseau set me right. This blind prejudice vanished. I learned to respect human nature, and I should consider myself far more useless than the ordinary working man if I did not believe this view could give worth to all others to establish the rights of man.
In 1731, Rousseau visited Paris for the first time. His initial impressions were hardly favorable. It is safe to say that Rousseau's early disgust for Paris colored his feelings toward the group of thinkers associated with that city. Paris was the center of the Enlightenment, the great cultural movement of the age. The Enlightenment was not monolithic. It varied from one philosophe to another. The term philosophe means philosopher, but it is perhaps better translated as intellectual or man of letters. The philosophes included Voltaire, the most famous writer of his age, and Montesquieu, whose book Spirit of the Laws exerted a powerful influence on the framers of the Constitution of the United States. In general, the philosophes sought to popularize the new scientific approach to the world, to combat what they saw to be ignorance and superstition and the blind adherence to tradition. They were not revolutionaries, but reformers on a crusade to improve life through critical reasoning in the area of morals, religion, economics, and politics. Through the brilliance of their writings, they became the stars of the Parisian salons, those stylish gatherings presided over by cultivated ladies with an urge to be in the thick of intellectual and political affairs. An inquisitive young man, Rousseau familiarized himself with these new ideas. He also became acquainted with some of the most prominent philosophes. he journeyed to Paris to demonstrate a novel system of musical notation he had invented to make music more accessible to the people. There he met Denis Diderot, one of the leading philosophers. The cultural authorities rejected his system, but Diderot became his close friend, and then, in later years, his bitter enemy. In 1743, Rousseau became secretary to the French ambassador to the Republic of Venice. He was treated like a servant. Once, when the Duke of Modena came to dine, Rousseau was not permitted to sit at the table. He quit the job, but he had observed at close quarters how degrading dependence on another can be, and how it gives the one with the upper hand the opportunity to indulge the malice and the will to power that seemed common in so-called civilized man. Rousseau remembered this lesson. Back in Paris, he took up residence at an inexpensive hotel, where a young provincial woman, Thérèse Levasseur, served as maid. People mocked her for her simplicity and countrified ways, but Rousseau's heart went out to her. She became his common-law wife for the rest of his life. Their relationship has been criticized. Thérèse was indeed simple, in more ways than one. She could never remember the order of the months, and once, on being told that a certain acquaintance was a minister of the church, she got it into her head that he was the Pope, and always referred to him as such. Nonetheless, Rousseau felt comfortable with her and loved her dearly. She gave him 5 children, which became the cause of great scandal, not because of their illegitimacy, but because Rousseau gave them up, one after the other, to the foundling asylum. When this became general knowledge, Voltaire let the secret out, there was a storm of criticism. How could Rousseau, the writer who spoke so movingly of the respect due the growing child and his blossoming spirit, how could he simply abandon his own children, and 5 of them to boot? In a letter to a noble lady, Rousseau defends his chosen lifestyle.
Why have I not married, you will ask? Madame, ask it of your unjust laws. It was not fitting for me to contract an eternal engagement, and it will never be proved to me that my duty binds me to it. But we ought not to have children when we cannot support them. Pardon me, madame. Nature means us to have offspring, since the earth produces sustenance enough for all. But it is the rich, it is your class, which robs mine of the bread of my children. I know that foundlings are not delicately nurtured. So much the better for them, they become more robust. They do not make gentlemen of them, but peasants or artisans. They would not know how to dance or ride on horseback, but they would have strong, unwearied legs. I deprived myself the delight of seeing them, and I have never tasted the sweetness of a father's embrace. Alas, I see in this only a claim on your pity.